All right, so, for this deep dive, we've got some listener-submitted material, and I think this is a good one. It's pretty interesting, especially for, well, I mean, for anyone really, but especially if you're, in law school right now, kind of getting into all this.
Yeah, definitely. I think it touches on some pretty fundamental stuff. Law and medicine, they always seem to find a way to, intersect. And this case is a really good example of that. How tricky it can get when you're trying to figure out who's responsible when something goes wrong, especially when you've got doctors from one place, like a university hospital, working in a different hospital altogether.
It gets complicated. So this case, it's called Parker v. Vanderbilt University, and it kind of throws you right into the deep end of medical malpractice liability. These are the kinds of situations that, as future lawyers, you really got to wrap your heads around.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just about understanding the medicine. It's about understanding the legal framework, the doctrines, the precedents, all that comes into play.
Exactly. So, for context, right? This case goes back to 1984, and it all happened at Nashville General Hospital. A patient, Richard Parker,
Okay.
comes in. He'd been shot, needed emergency surgery, a really high-pressure situation.
Yeah. And during the surgery, there's this terrible mistake. The anesthesiologist, well, actually a nurse anesthetist in this case, misplaced the endotracheal tube, the tube that's supposed to go down the trachea to help the patient breathe. But they put it in the esophagus instead. And tragically, nobody caught the mistake for about 12 minutes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you can imagine Mr. Parker, he suffered severe brain damage. It's a heartbreaking situation. It really highlights the stakes involved in these kinds of cases.
Absolutely, yeah. And so this case, this Parker case, it really boils down to this one big question. Can Vanderbilt University, where these doctors were from, be held responsible for what happened, even though it all went down at Nashville General Hospital?
Right. That's where this idea of vicarious liability comes in, which I'm sure you're all learning about in your classes.
It's a big one.
Basically, it's this legal principle that can hold an employer liable for the actions of their employees, if those actions were done within the scope of their work.
Makes sense. So, just to clarify for our listeners,
Yeah.
at the trial level, the court actually dismissed the claims against Vanderbilt and its doctors.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it went to an appeal, right?
That's right.
So, what we're going to do in this deep dive is we're going to really unpack the arguments, look at the legal principles at play, and try to understand how the appellate court arrived at its decision.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's start with a concept I think a lot of people have heard of, respondent and superior.
Oh yeah, that's a foundational principle. You're gonna see that one a lot.
So, can you just kind of break that down for our listener? Like, what's the gist of respondent superior?
Sure. So respondent superior is this legal doctrine that says essentially an employer can be held liable for the negligence of their employees, but only if the employee was acting within the scope of their employment when the negligence occurred.
Makes sense.
And a really important factor in determining that scope is control. You
Oh.
know, how much control did the employer have over the way their employee did their job?
So it's not just enough to say, oh, they're my employees, so I'm responsible for everything they do,
Yeah.
right? There's got to be more to it than that.
Exactly. It's about whether the employer had the right to control the means and method of the employee's work.
Okay. In this case, this Parker case, it throws another wrench in the works, right?
Yeah.
With this thing called the lone servant doctrine.
Right. The lone servant doctrine is this interesting exception to respondent superior. It pops up when an employee, who we're calling the servant in this context, is temporarily working under the control of a different employer, who we're calling the borrowing master.
So, like a temp worker or something?
Yeah, kind of. It's like a temporary transfer of control. Even if their original employer is still paying them, if it's the borrowing master who's calling the shots on how they do their work during that specific time, then the borrowing master might be the one on the hook for any negligence.
I see. So in this case, the court decided that those Vanderbilt doctors, they're essentially loaned servants to Nashville General Hospital during that surgery. So what made the court reach that conclusion?
Well, the big thing was the contract between Vanderbilt University and the metropolitan government, the entity that ran Nashville General.
So there was a written agreement in place.
Yeah, there was. And it said very clearly that even though the doctors were still employed by Vanderbilt, when they were working at National General, they were under the control and supervision of the hospital.
Interesting. So even though Vanderbilt was their main employer, for all intents and purposes, they were reporting to National General during that specific surgery.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about respondent superior and the lone servant doctrine, but there's this other idea that kind of floats around in these medical cases, and that's the captain of the ship doctrine.
Oh, right. Yeah, the captain of the ship doctrine. And that's an older concept for sure.
Yeah, it is. So can you just kind of give our listeners the rundown on that? Like, what's the deal with captain of the ship?
So the captain of the ship doctrine basically says that the surgeon, you know, the head honcho in the operating room, is automatically responsible for anything that goes wrong during surgery, even if it wasn't directly their fault.
So even if, like, a nurse makes a mistake, the surgeon's still on the hook.
That was the idea, yeah. It's like saying, look, you're the captain, you're in charge, so anything your crew does, good or bad, is ultimately your responsibility.
Wow. So if they'd used that captain of the ship idea in this Parker case, would those Vanderbilt surgeons have been held liable, even though they didn't actually misplace the tube themselves?
Right, yeah. That's how it would have worked under that doctrine. But the thing is, the Tennessee Court of Appeals, they specifically rejected the captain of the ship doctrine in this case.
Interesting.
They actually called it unnecessarily confusing.
Unnecessarily confusing, huh?
Yeah, and their reasoning, it's actually pretty insightful for anyone studying law, especially healthcare law.
Okay.
They basically said, modern surgery, it relies on teamwork, not on a single authority.
That's a good point. It's not like the old days where the surgeon was this lone wolf doing everything themselves.
Right, right, exactly.
It's a whole team effort now.
Exactly. You've got anesthesiologists, you've got nurses, you've got all sorts of specialists, each with their own area of expertise. So the court was basically recognizing that the captain of the ship idea, it just doesn't really fit with the realities of modern medicine anymore.
Right. It's much more collaborative.
Right.
So in the Parker case, the issue was with the nurse anesthetists, right?
Right.
And they were employed by Nashville General, not by Vanderbilt. So the question then becomes, did those Vanderbilt doctors have any real control over those nurses? Were they acting as their masters, so to speak?
And the court said no. They were pretty clear about that. They pointed out that the Vanderbilt doctors, they didn't choose those nurses. They didn't have the authority to tell them exactly how to do their job. And there was no evidence that surgeons are even supposed to supervise things like placing an endotracheal tube.
So those nurses, they were following Nashville General's protocols, using Nashville General's equipment, all that.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we're trying to understand the court's reasoning, it seems like this whole idea of control, that's really the key, right?
Oh, absolutely. Control was central to their decision. There were two main things they focused on.
Okay.
First, they looked at that contract we talked about, the one between Vanderbilt and the Metropolitan Government. That contract made it crystal clear that while those doctors were working at Nashville General, they were under the hospital's control. And second, the court found that the Vanderbilt surgeons, they just didn't have that direct control over those nurse anesthetists. They didn't hire them, didn't tell them how to do their specific jobs, and there was no expectation that they should be overseeing things like endotracheal tube placement.
So because of that lack of control, both because of the contract and the specific circumstances in the operating room, the court said Vanderbilt wasn't liable.
Precisely.
So for all our listeners out there who are, you know, future legal eagles, why is this case, Parker v. Vanderbilt, so important?
Well, it really gets to the heart of medical malpractice law. It shows how courts apply the lone servant doctrine in these really tricky healthcare situations. You know, when you have medical professionals from different institutions all working together, figuring out who's responsible when something goes wrong, that can be a real legal puzzle.
Yeah.
And Parker v. Vanderbilt, it provides some valuable clues for solving that puzzle.
So it's not just about like where someone gets their paycheck from. It's about who had the actual power to control what was happening at the time.
Exactly. This case moves away from simply focusing on where the doctors are formally employed. And instead, it emphasizes looking at who had control over the specific work being done when the alleged negligence happened. It really acknowledges the realities of modern medicine with all its specialized roles and complex teamwork.
Right. It takes into account that whole team dynamic.
It does. And it has pretty big implications for how hospitals operate, especially when they're collaborating with other organizations for staffing.
Right. Because if those contracts aren't clear about who controls what, then the hospital could end up being liable, even if it wasn't their own employees who messed up.
Exactly. That's why it's so important for hospitals, especially when they're working with universities or other institutions for staffing, to be really careful about how they structure those agreements. They need to make sure everything's spelled out, you know, who's responsible for what, who has the authority to make decisions, all of that.
So this case, it's kind of a wake-up call for hospitals to really scrutinize those contracts and make sure everyone's roles and responsibilities are crystal clear.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. It really highlights the importance of clarity and specificity in these agreements.
So just to sum it all up for our listeners, the main takeaway from Parker v. Vanderbilt is that when you're dealing with situations where medical professionals are essentially borrowed from another institution, figuring out who's liable really comes down to figuring out who had control over what was being done at the time the alleged negligence occurred.
That's a great summary.
And it's something that anyone going into the legal field, especially healthcare law, needs to understand, because as medicine gets more and more complex, these kinds of situations, they're only going to become more common.
Absolutely.
So keep those legal brains sharp. Pay attention to the nuances of things like vicarious liability and the lone servant doctrine. And you'll be well on your way to navigating this tricky area of law.
And one final thought to leave you with, as healthcare evolves and we see more and more collaboration between institutions, you know, how might legal doctrines like lone servant need to adapt to keep pace?
That's a good question.
You know, to make sure that we have both accountability for medical errors and that everyone involved is treated fairly. It's definitely something to think about as you move forward in your legal careers.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive. See you next time.
See you next time.